Tired of juggling sales tools or spending hours on prospecting just to book a few meetings? Meet Apollo, the go-to-market platform for finding leads, connecting with buyers, and closing deals all in one place. Apollo gives you access to over 210 million contacts and AI that handles all your busy work, finding leads, drafting emails, and even prioritizing your day. So stop paying for five different sales tools when one does it all. Visit apollo.io and sign up free today.
Welcome to a throwback edition of the Social Flight Live podcast, where we feature a special past episode that stood out from all the rest. Join our live broadcast every Tuesday evening at 8 p.m. Eastern at socialflightlive.com. Social Flight is brought to you by Aspen Avionics, Avidyne, Bose Aviation, Continental Aerospace Technologies, Lightspeed Aviation, Massimo MightySat, Tempest Aero Group, and Whip Air. And now, here's your host, Jeff Simon.
Good evening, everyone, and welcome to Social Flight Live. I'm Jeff Simon. We have a great show for you tonight. Tyson Wise is here from 4Flight. It's going to be an amazing show. As we get started, I'd just like to give you, as always, a couple quick things about what's happening locally, what's happening around all of general aviation here as we see it through Social Flight. One quick thing here first is here with the Social Flight family. I am happy to report that Ben Simon, son number two, has completed his solo cross-country flight and his journey to getting his private pilot's license. And as part of that, we're going to be getting a second t-shirt for him. I'll show you this. This is what we did recently when Jake did the same thing. It's from wildbluegear.com. My son did his solo cross country and all I got was his t-shirt. So cute little thing. If you know, I'll tell you this, no real connection here between this site, but I love it. Wild Blue Gear, the Rex over there, is just a young man that's come out with some pretty cool things where you can put in your local airport and destinations and anything personal about you and create these, all this custom gear. And so it's been fun and kind of a nice little thing to do here at the house. Now, also through Social Flight, one of the things, let me turn on the little view here. One of the things, of course, is that we get a really good view into what's happening around general aviation through all of the events and destinations and things that people are adding to the system. Tens of thousands of events. And so what we are continuing to see is a rise in general aviation coming out of the crisis slowly, step by step, and even against the backdrop of the seasons starting to change, at least for us here in New England, and some of the really challenging weather situations that, of course, have been happening through both the fires on the West Coast and the hurricanes in the Southeast. We are still seeing amazing strength in general aviation and growth happening there. And we're just happy to see that against the backdrop of safe social distancing and everyone trying to do their best to participate in general aviation as that happens. And another thing that's really important is, of course, you know, we created everything about Social Flight. Socialflight.com, the free Social Flight mobile apps are just about getting people to fly and giving you a mission. And so everything that we have done is surrounding this concept of the why that you fly. And I am so thrilled to welcome tonight's guest, Tyson Wise, because, you know, while Social Flight may be about the why you fly and finding your mission and your destination, for most of the pilots out there, the how you get there and the means of doing that is done through 4Flight and because of Tyson. And so what I'd like to do is welcome him to the show. You know, Tyson is an entrepreneur and co-founder and CEO of 4Flight, the market-leading provider of critically acclaimed integrated flight applications. Since its founding, and this goes back to 2007, and we'll learn more about this in that time, their company has grown into a multinational operation. They've got offices in the United States and Europe. They serve personal, business, military, and commercial flight operations around the world. And as many of us know, they were acquired by Boeing through Jeppesen in 2019. Just a couple things that you may not know. This year in 2020, Tyson and Jason, the two co-founders of 4Flight, will be inducted into the Texas Aviation Hall of Fame and receive the Godfrey Cabot Award from the Aero Club of New England for making a unique, significant, and unparalleled contribution to the advance and foster aviation. Tyson serves on the boards of the Smithsonian National Air and Space Museum, the General Aviation Manufacturers Association, GAMA, where he chairs Flight Operations and Policy Committee, and the NBAA Advisory Board. He's an active instrument and type-rated multi-engine pilot. Welcome, Tyson.
Thanks, Jeff. Glad to be here. Thanks for putting this together. It's the 4Flight team, really, that's made all this possible. So I'd love to take credit for it, but man, we've got a really great team behind us that makes it all happen.
I'll back that up too, because you know we've all spent time at the shows getting to meet at least the part of your team that you let out, that you let travel to the show and get inundated by people at Sun and Fun and Air Venture. And it seems like your booth is just stacked, like it's 4, 5, 6 people deep to get questions answered. And I'm sure that most of those people are requesting new features.
Well, we love being there. I mean, the shows are a big part of, I mean, they generate so much energy, right? And we love being out and visiting with customers and putting on a lot of the seminars that we do. Disappointed that we haven't been able to be out there as much, this year, given everything that is going on around us. But the shows are great. I mean, like what you do in terms of, creating opportunities for pilots to be social and get out and fly missions, being at the shows is a big part of, the industry and just life of being a pilot.
Yeah, I mean, ultimately we're a social crowd. We love the idea. We may fly without all our seats filled and spend a lot of time in the air that way, but we're always going somewhere where it's so wonderful to be next to another pilot, looking at something, maybe checking out an aircraft, and those conversations strike up, and you wind up with relationships that may last forever.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, one of the biggest things that we reflect on at 4Flight in our history is the journey and the experience, right? I mean, the things that the team has gotten to do by being part of the team and working on the products that we build across all the different markets has just given the team members lots of opportunity to go out and experience things that they may not have had the opportunity to do otherwise, right? So enjoy the journey, enjoy the flight out there.
Absolutely. So let's go back in time and give people a little bit of a taste of how this came to be. I mean, you go back take me back to how you got started, what generated the idea, and then how you made it through those early Wild West days of mobile devices and app growth.
Yeah, the genesis was really two projects that one I had created and another that my co-founder Jason Miller and his wife had created, originally called 4Flight, the desktop application. And he and I met online in 2006 and said, hey, we need to marry these two things together and allow our users to enjoy both of the things that we had built. And so that was the beginning of our collaboration. I had a web-based product really simple, looking up METARs and weather around the local area. And for those pilots who were around, in 2007 or flying back then, we had an array of different tools that we used. You and I were catching up on some of the technologies that existed before, iPad and apps and that sort of stuff. But we had these two applications and we married them together and got to know one another a bit more and agreed that we wanted to collaborate on something. And so, really what we were trying to do early on is build a better version of AirNav, really, right? Because that was a site that we all used, back then. And we really liked this fuel computer, this trip computer that they had on the website. It was buried down in the bottom right-hand corner. So we said, well, why don't we just, sort of reorganize some of that stuff? And while we were thinking about designs for, building a better mousetrap, if you will, the iPhone was announced. And that was February of 2007. And it wasn't until the summer that the iPhone came out. But when the iPhone did come out, even though we didn't really intend on rushing to the store to get one, I happened to be in the mall in Houston and stopped by an Apple store and saw a big stack there and slid to unlock a phone. It was just like, oh my God, this is really amazing. And I had a BlackBerry and a Palm Trio at the time. And those were just sort of instantly dinosaurs, right? I mean, the world had just changed overnight with the release of the iPhone. And we decided in a week to take the project that we had done and convert that over to a web application that would run in the iPhone's browser. Because in 2007, the App Store didn't exist. So the only way thing you could do is build little apps that ran in a really small window. And that's what we started with. And that garnered us some early customers. We put a paywall up and started charging a subscription for that. Then Apple invited us into their app directory, which is the precursor to the App Store. It was just a list of all the things you could run in the phone's browser. And that led to a relationship with Apple, where they invited us into the developer program in 2008, introduced us to their development kit, and then introduced us to this new business model, which is the ability to distribute software through the App Store. And that was really groundbreaking back in 2008, because when you wrote software, the way that you distributed it was, you know, you might put it on your website, you might put it on CDs and ship it out, you might stick it in a magazine and in a CD insert, or get the app in a box on a shelf in some computer store. So all sorts of different ways to distribute software, and Apple just streamlined all that. So not only provided a marketplace for it, connected to lots of users adopting their software, but it enabled you to easily charge for that software as well. And so we got invited to the Apple development program. We were one of the first 500 apps in the App Store. We developed a following there. And then, you know, really what I tell people when we're telling the story of ForeFlight is we were really fortunate to be at a time when then there was just a string of disruptions, right? And the disruptions were the iPhone was invented, right? And the next disruption was the App Store, which is a new way of distributing software. So you have the new computing platform and a new distribution mechanism. So those disruptions really created the foundation for growth. And we really grew along with the growth in Apple devices. So as Apple would add new devices, that would bring in new waves of customers. As they added new carriers, that would bring new customers to the iPhone. And then, of course, the iPad came out in 2010, and we all know the role that has in our lives today as aviators for a lot of us. And that again unlocked a whole another wave of disruption that really transformed the things that we use in the cockpit. Right? I mean, before the iPhone and the iPad, we had lots of things in the airplane. We had little green books, the AFD that the FAA produced, and sectional charts, and flight guide, and I mean, just an array of different things that we buy, and that has really just gotten collapsed into one thing. And so those were important disruptions. And then other disruptions after that, ADS-B, a big game changer for all of us that fly. And I remember in 2010, 2011, and 2012, when that was emerging, you know, we hadn't really wrapped our heads around it. And then we pivoted and we focused on, building one of the first battery-powered ADS-B receivers. And, looking back, had we not adopted that innovation, we wouldn't be where we are today, right? So, I think we were, fortunately super ambitious and hungry and, willing to, invest in just building cool things for pilots on top of all these innovations and attract a really great team of people to help us build all the things that we have built for all the different markets that we serve. And that ultimately created what we are today. In 2016, we did a deal with Garmin where we were partnered with them on interfacing with their avionics. So, we helped usher in some of those innovations and then leverage some of the innovations that Garmin has released to customers as well. And then we partnered with Jeppesen in 2016 to build a next generation application for the commercial flight deck. And that's how we got really introduced and built a relationship with the Jeppesen and the Boeing teams. But that's really sort of a thumbnail sketch of how we got from A to B. It was just, fortunate to be working on a project at a time when a new computing platform got dropped on us that was, really well adopted. And then another computing platform got dropped on us in 2010 and 2011. That's just continued to advance and deliver innovations that we can use to create new features that pilots love, like taking advantage of the advances in graphics processors to really deliver sort of unparalleled mapping and 3D experiences and the like. And so, that's really part of our culture is searching out and looking for these technologies that we can assemble in interesting ways that deliver great experiences to customers and help them be safer and be more productive and just have a lot of fun doing it.
Well, it seems to me like, even in the story that you're telling, you're pretty humble about it.
Tired of juggling sales tools or spending hours on prospecting just to book a few meetings? Meet Apollo, the go-to-market platform for finding leads, connecting with buyers, and closing deals all in one place. Apollo gives you access to over 210 million contacts and AI that handles all your busy work, finding leads, drafting emails, and even prioritizing your day. So stop paying for five different sales tools when one does it all. Visit apollo.io and sign up free today.
Because the reality is, A, your timing was unbelievable and has remained unbelievable with every new innovation that's happened in technology. Part of what seems to make that timing so perfect is certainly not just luck. You consistently at ForeFlight bet on the right horse. Tell me about like how do you do that you figure out, okay, we're going to stick with Apple. You're not going to go over to Android. There's been lots of different things that have come to the general aviation market, and some of them were fringe. Some of them were came to all of technology and were fringe, but some actually seemed like they might have legs. You didn't bet on the wrong horse. Those things that you actually didn't partner with never actually went anywhere. I haven't seen you play catch up.
Yeah, you know, I mean, we've probably played catch up in various areas. I mean, I think all of us in the market look at what one another is doing and find ways to, you know, get inspiration from or innovate on top of that. And I think, you know, looking back to, you know, how did we make the decisions that we made? And again, I go back to the team, like the folks that were in the room debating those things that we should do. I think, you know, having, you know, a really strong group of team members, you know, at the table involved in those discussions has really helped us evaluate those things and pick what we want to do. I would say that also we were really bound in some respects by constraints, right? I think, you know, one of the things that Jason and I will say is that, you know, constraints are really healthy for a business because they, you know, force you to do things in ways that you might not have done if you had unlimited resources. And one of the advantages that we had is, you know, we never took venture capital, right? And so we weren't really forced to try to find a bunch of paths that may have worked out and spend money on those and find that they didn't pan out. But by having constraints and growing within our means, that really helped us focus on things that you know, we thought we could really generate a return on, right? And the other is we were constrained by our interests, right? Like, what were we really interested in? You know, we loved, for example, people always ask, you know, when Android, right? And we've really loved building on the iOS platform, and we really didn't have the resources to go out and expand into other platforms. And even when we had the resources to do that, we thought, you know, gosh, man, we would have to invest, you know, what we've invested. If we look at like just the sum of the R&D dollars we spent over 15 years, I mean, it's a massive number. It's tens of millions of dollars in R&D investment, you know, over that decade. And, you know, we go, gosh, well, how would we, you know, replicate that? You know, we have done some things going on to other platforms on the commercial side because there were platforms that were you know, highly adopted there that you know, we've had the teams had to invest in building things that work on both platforms and some of the foundational technologies for that. But yeah, the decision making and the judgment and the excitement really drove us to what we wanted to focus on. The constraints meant that we, you know, focused our dollars where we could get the highest returns. And there's certainly lots of other things, you know, we would love to pursue, but constraints focus you on that. And, you know, anytime that we're building something and we're also thinking about, you know, how do we you know, earn value for that and use that to reinvest in the product. And unfortunately, you know, one of the things we were able to do really early on is build enough of a subscriber base that generated enough cash to really reinvest in the business and then reinvest as much of that as possible, all sort of guided by what are some really cool things we can do for pilots that they'll like? What are things that we'll do, we can build for ourselves that will make our lives better? And, you know, various members of the team will get up and really, you know, advocate for some particular feature that, you know, will help them out. I mean, I remember, you know, advocating, for example, for, you know, things in our hazard advisor technology, because flying around in Houston in the haze with, you know, 2,200 foot towers all over the place. And I was like, wow, you know, you look up one day after being heads down and go, wow, this really tall tower in front of me. You know, I'd like to not have that experience again. So let's, you know, let's build some things that prevent those sorts of accidents from happening, right? Or look at where pilots have had challenges over the years and try to innovate and build things for that. For example, we added the ability to do for piston and turboprop airplanes, V-speed calculation, takeoff speeds, takeoff distances, because there are instances where people, run off the runway or, miscalculate the impacts of density, altitude, things like that. And so we keep finding ways to build things into the application that hopefully will save somebody some heartache at some point and help them get to, all of these answers they need to calculate for every flight a lot more quickly. So that was a long answer to your question, but ultimately it's constraints, passionate team members who've got really, I think, really sound judgment in what they will like themselves and what therefore customers will like.
Well, I can definitely say you've made some very good decisions. As someone who runs a company with mobile apps that also run on Android, I can tell you there's a bit of a nightmare when, as you alluded to, everyone's got a different Android device, and it's a whole different world on iOS. And I think focusing your company in that direction, it certainly makes a lot of sense, especially with the complexity and the power of the things that you're dealing with and the lives at stake. When someone's navigating using that. Now, one of the things in the areas that it's one thing about kind of timing and betting on the right horse, there you weren't the only player in the game at many points. You still aren't, but even at that or those early days before there was critical mass, it seemed like anyone could have won that race. And one of the key differences seems to be that in the same way that iOS has a very strong user interface design, a very simple and has guidelines and ways of going about that. From the very beginning, ForeFlight has been very clear and simple and had design guidelines that make sense. Where did that come from?
I have to give a lot of credit to Jason and our design team, right? I mean, a really great sense of style and aesthetic and sort of some foundational principles in software that we want to use ourselves, right? And I think there's somewhat of an uncompromising approach to really great design, right? And that's been a tenet from the very beginning. Jason's got phenomenal design skills and was a Photoshop expert, and bringing his judgment to bear on what we built really shaped that. And then we invested really early on in a design team, right? And we found that the return on our investment in really strong design team members, led by Ryan McBride and his team of folks that designed for various markets, was a really important differentiator in investment. And going back to constraints and dollars and what you spend money on, we as business leaders and entrepreneurs have to decide where every nickel goes, because everything is a bet, right? And we found by investing in really great design, we were actually more productive as a company, because developers in the early days, I think we would whipsaw some of our development team by drawing something out and sketching it, and they'd go build it, and then we'd want to change it, and they'd pull their hair out, and we wanted it to look a little bit differently. And so design really brought a lot of order to how we built applications, right? And so when we go to build something, we do that with the design, maybe 80% of the way there, and then we experiment with the ergonomics and see how we like it and whether or not the design is a target, and we adjust those sorts of things over time. But in terms of how we, I think, ultimately went back and wrote the story of ForeFlight and how we ended up, on top, when there was an array of different companies building apps. I mean, Bendix King and Honeywell, and I mean, lots of companies were at the table there. It's one, we locked onto it really early. And I think, as you grow as a company, you look at the things that you can invest in, and sometimes you look at new innovations and maybe discount them and not put enough energy into those early on, and those become dilemmas later. And then there's books written about the subject, right? And so we were just, that was all we knew, and every dollar of revenue we made was a new dollar, and that was exciting, right? We made $100 a day. That was awesome. If we were part of a bigger company, they might not have thought that was so awesome, right? At that point in time. And so we had this sense of urgency. We knew we had big competitors who were going to move quickly. We knew that from business school days, first mover is not a long-term sustainable competitive advantage, right? And so you have to get beyond the first mover to some, level of, a level of altitude, use an aviation analogy, in order to sustain flight, right? And so we have that sense of urgency. Again, we really invested in building a team, because the only way you can build all the stuff that we're building is you have lots of really great team members that can build things in parallel, right? And we've got all these different manufacturing lines running. They're producing code and landing things at different times. And I think in some regards, we invested earlier in our team, and we invested in some really important partnerships along the way. Right? We invested, we had a partnership with AOPA very early on, which gave us a big tailwind. We've had a great relationship with Spore East for a very long time. And, they've been a really great partner in supporting us. And, a lot of our early success is, attributed to their contributions, helping us market the product and the company and the solutions that we put together. So we've had some really great partners along the way that have contributed to our success. So, and then we invested externally in sales and marketing, and really early on latching on to, for example, the business aviation market. I remember before we had quit our day jobs, getting a phone call from Walmart who said, "Hey, we want to, buy iPads for our pilots." And that was 2010, 2011. And we said, that's interesting. There's a whole market of business aviation customers that are going to buy differently. And we invest in the commerce systems for that. And we built up a sales team, and we have sales team members, focused on different regions of the country and different segments. And so, building that team gives you the ability to go out and be with customers and get more intelligence and take that intelligence and bring it back to the product. So we had a bigger intelligence network out there. We had, probably a larger team. And that team was really, really productive. We just never, even to this day, have lost sight that competition can come from anywhere, and you have to operate with a sense of urgency and keep your pedal to the metal and keep moving, because disruption can come from anywhere.
Right. Well, it makes a lot of sense. And you and I were both obviously back in the early days when I was at VistaNav, and we were creating those products at the same time. And you mentioned the corporate market. Now that was a really, really challenging market of EFBs at the time, electronic flight bags, and where the regulations were going from the FAA to be able to sell to the corporate market and even beyond that as well during the time. It sounds like you really put a lot of your percentage of investment into R&D and especially into that design team. So you could do that. How did you figure that out? How do you determine, how much you were going to continue to, eat ramen noodles and make that investment in R&D and design so you can bet on where those things are going? Because like you said, it's one thing for Part 91 pilots to be able to use this all over the place. But if you're going and targeting corporate and then eventually commercial, there's a lot of regulation around that.
Yeah. So regarding the regulation, I think that's one of the constraints that we applied, right? Which is we always wanted to stay on the non-certified, non-highly regulated side of what we did, because we have friends in the certified world, and it's a different DNA. You sort of have to grow up in that world and understand all the dynamics there. So we really stayed on this side of it up to a point, and then we had to go for certain markets, seek operational approvals, and get into some of those things that influence policy. That's when we joined Gamma, was when we realized, okay, we've got to play a different game here if we're going to get into different markets. I mean, how we, how we realized that design was so important was, Ryan McBride, who was our first designer, he's our head of our design, came to us and said, "Hey, I'm a pilot, love your product, looking for a new gig." We brought him in as a contractor for a while, and then realized, wow, we're getting a lot of ROI on having these designs really well put together and have a process and an approach and practice for that. And so we started expanding our design team, and we want to expand that more, right? Because it really helps you explore the edges. And one thing that's really great about talented designers is they have to really think about what all the requirements are, and they have to explore all the dark corners of user experience and think about how things interact. And so, we really learned that you've got to provide sort of time to explore those different avenues. And, sometimes we get frustrated because we want things out, leaders always want things to happen faster than they happen, right? And so,
tired of juggling sales tools or spending hours on prospecting just to book a few meetings? Meet Apollo, the go-to-market platform for finding leads, connecting with buyers, and closing deals, all in one place. Apollo gives you access to over 210 million contacts and AI that handles all your busy work, finding leads, drafting emails, and even prioritizing your day. So stop paying for five different sales tools when one does it all. Visit apollo.io and sign up free today.
You go, well, why are we exploring that? And you realize that it's a fact. Well, we explored a path that we didn't go down. And that was really important in developing our understanding. So I think it's been a process of maturing and, seeing the value in that. But, forever I will, in ventures I'm involved in, will, make sure that's a key component of the development process, because it really helps you focus and use your dollars wisely.
Do you do a lot of A/B testing of the things, or how is it all very kind of visionary based on the designers that you have and their expertise and the approach you're taking, or is a lot of it done through experimentation and testing?
That's evolved. I think early on we said no A/B and testing. We'll just we'll use it. We'll figure out what we like and then we'll go with that, right? And that's evolved over time. To include various amounts of things you mentioned, like example of an A/B test where you're really trying to experiment and does this work or does this other thing work? We did some of that early on and found very little differences. And as we've gone on, we've employed that in more areas. Like for example, what works in terms of promotions or commerce or pricing or things like that. That's where we get some really good data on, where are people's interest in adopting premium tiers or things of that nature. The design team does a lot more user experience testing these days, where they'll sit down and they'll show different concepts and have tabletop exercises with customers and test designs on them. So that you could call that a variant of A/B testing, but really what they're doing is they're bringing concepts to customers directly and saying which of these things sorts of make sense. So I'd say we really evolved the tools in our design suite that we're using to understand and better narrow in on the ultimate solution that we need to build.
Right. And one other question about design. I mean, the general aviation world, FAA, all of the everything that is, even if you're not certified, this is a world that's based on refinement. It certainly is hit by, as you mentioned, disruption and revolutionary technologies. And then there's a lot of refinement that just constantly is happening. And that is certainly what ForeFlight has done. That said, you're running on a device, an operating system that's not really based on that makes a lot of churn happen just for the heck of it in some cases. I mean, there's a new iOS version that's kind of always coming. Now we like flat icons. Now we want to put 3D back in, like all sorts of, now they're going to be around. How do you survive that world, or how do you negotiate when you're going to change your design or both? Of course, you always have technologically adapt, but how do you adapt to what Apple's doing?
Yeah, so I mean, that's the nature of the game, right? And the nature of the game is, and one of the sayings we've said is, every year Apple tries to kill you, right? And how is that? And that's, well, fast updates to operating systems. This year, the new dynamic was have a press conference and release iOS 14 the next day. And the team's like, hold on a second. We used to have a week to do this. Now we've got 24 hours. And so the general theme is light on your feet, right? And you have to expect and plan for and make time for curveballs. And, you can hate the player or hate the game, right? But as they say, but that's the game, right? You just have to react to it and make time for it. And if you don't, you could face an existential problem, right? And Apple always gives you lots of clues about things that you need to do ahead of time. And early on, I think we took fewer of those cues, and over time, we've said, okay, they're shifting the technology at some point, right? And so if they say, here's a new technology, we think you guys really should look at it, you probably should really look at it, right? Being in the App Store and iOS for 13 years, I mean, the code has all of those generations of iOS support, or has had lots of generations of older technologies, and we've had to modernize those over time, right? So you have to spend a lot more of your time as their features expand and you progress through time. You're cutting ties with old stuff or cleaning it up or modernizing it. And so we have to do a fair bit of that as well. So invest time and money in cleaning house and be light on your feet.
Yep. Do you find a lot of pressure basically almost from Apple for things that are not necessarily core, but they really do want you to support Apple watches and whatever else the next thing's going to be that may not be the prime thing in your wheelhouse. But ideally they're really trying to give you a hint. They want everybody there.
Yeah, I think they're really good about encouraging you to take a look at new technologies, right? And they have teams of people who evangelize and introduce you to different things. And they really want to move the state of the art forward. And so you have opportunities to engage and learn more about technologies. And in the case of aviation, shape some of the foundational technologies that are in the devices or in the operating system. I mean, Apple loves the aviation market. And vice versa. So there's a collaboration there that exists. I'd say it's not so much pressure as it is encouragement to look at things that they're adding and think about how those can affect your customer experience. Like the new iPads have a LiDAR in them, right? With LiDAR and AR and where things are heading, you kind of go, okay, I can see how all these things are coming together. And I need to be thinking ahead about what experiences maybe we deliver down the road, right? Like, do you do iPhone or iPad-based visual checklists and walkarounds of your airplane where things are popping up in the iPad and pointing to elements on the airplane that you need to be mindful of while you're doing a pre-flight check? Those are things that may evolve as the technology evolves. And they're building incrementally towards new experiences that you just need to be mindful of. Like the Apple Watch just came out and it's got a pulse oximeter, the new one, and an altimeter. Okay, that's really great for aviation. Those are two things that a lot of pilots need. And so you start thinking about, well, is that an opportunity for us to build something interesting for that platform? But every time we've sort of followed followed along with platform evolutions, we've done really well with that.
Well, that definitely makes a lot of sense. Now, 4Flight is involved in obviously a number of markets that expand beyond general aviation, whether it's business aviation, military, or any of the other things. How have those markets either supported general aviation or what's happening in terms of how does general aviation fit in with all the other businesses that you're expanding into?
Yeah, I'd say in every market that we've gone to, another market has contributed to the success of that or vice versa, right? There are things that we build for the military that come down to or come over to business or general aviation and vice versa. There are things we build for the commercial market that are really advanced technologies on the Boeing side that we'll see and have seen come into 4Flight as well, right? And so, I very much have a view that supporting pilots of all types flying all types of airplanes in all regions will help us get outside of our comfort zone and expand and build technologies to help support them, right? And as we have evolved in our own respective lives, meaning individuals on the leadership team and in lead positions, those experiences have really influenced the product. And I can, I know that, we took a trip as a leadership team to the Bahamas one year and we flew around and we could, realize, we need to understand more about customs and border control, CBP sorts of operations. We have team members who do, seaplane and float flying. And so they go, well, we need to understand we need to have better waterways and better lake depictions and better labeling and better, locations for that. We have pilots that do mountain flying and that's really influenced how terrain looks in the application. We recently added mountain passes and, peak labels and all sorts of other content. And some of that was influenced by our entry into the European market, where it's mostly VFR flying, right? I mean, getting an instrument rating in Europe is a very difficult thing to do, very expensive and time-consuming, and a lot of pilots don't do that, so they fly VFR. Well, there's great technologies in Europe that we've developed and brought those back into the U.S. Like, we have graphical NOTAMs in our European market. We have a great product there called the GA Forecast, which gives you a regional depiction of weather imagery there. And we did a lot of stuff with airspace labeling to support the European market, right? So all of those markets have helped us grow in weight, and they cross-pollinate, right? And so, you know, customers will say, well, why don't you focus more, you know, on, you know, my problems, right? And we're trying to solve, you know, problems for pilots in all walks of life, but they all benefit from the work we've had to do in those other markets.
Absolutely. Is there any way to estimate kind of percentages of what part of your company is working in different areas? Or, I mean, really, what role is it, or how big is the perception of GA at 4Flight versus some of these other markets?
I mean, we're fundamentally a GA-focused consumer consumer business, right? I mean, the vast majority of our revenue comes from our individual owners and operators. And so that's on our mind every time we build new features, right? We try to strike a balance between, you know, what things are we investing a lot of money into and therefore need to make part of, you know, some premium package, but are we delivering something to all of our customers with every release? And so that's an active discussion that the team always has, which is, you know, what can we partition where to make sure that we have, you know, good headroom to reinvest in the business? And then how do we deliver new things to, you know, every bit of our customer base? But in terms of, you know percentage of folks in different markets, yeah, we can't estimate that. A lot of our markets, like the military, for example, ride on a lot of the things that we're doing for individual pilots, right? Now, there's a set of features that are unique to them, like our GA customers don't need to know when exactly they need to be over a specific point in time, you know, at a second interval to do something interesting. Well, the military customers need to have those sorts of capabilities. And they have all sorts of different charts that they use as well. And so we've had to build technologies that improve our ability to render a really complex charting product, but that translates into better performance for the core customer base. I'd be guessing off the top of my head if I knew exactly what percentage goes to what market, but there's a lot of cross sharing between those and a common core across them.
Right. So you've got obviously a huge growth now that's happened with your partnership with Boeing and Jeppesen as part of Boeing. And how is that affecting and helping your business?
Yeah, I mean, one of the ways immediately is Boeing has a worldwide footprint and channel, right? And so we now, instead of having a sales team of, you know, X number of people, we have a sales team of 100X that, right? And so, you know, we're, for example, Boeing's been super helpful is in our growth in the military markets, right? I mean, they have relationships with every military around the planet, right? And so, you know, 4Flight's now part of the portfolio, so that gets included in presentations, and that gives customers around the world the confidence that you know, that's a product that they can incorporate into their operation. So, you know, that's one aspect. They know a lot about, you know, building machines and have a lot of you know, data around those, and that comes into some of the products, some of the enhancements that we're making as well. They've got the best data set on the planet, and so we're bringing that data set, and we have been bringing elements of those data sets into the application to help our customers worldwide. And so it may not be apparent looking at the features that we're building, what is powered from our relationship, but there's a lot of things going both directions that will help us deliver more innovations down the road. And there's investments they're making in other markets that will benefit from and vice versa. So those are just a couple of the highlights that we get to leverage as a result of being in the family. And then, you know, some of our team members get to work on really cool things related to, you know, new products and new machines that the company is building. So they're, you know, they're excited about being able to participate in that sort of development and expand their skills and experiences as well.
Yeah, obviously as CEO of the company, it really must be something to be able to pull on those resources at this point and know that, again, whether it's access to data, access to all these other things that Boeing's doing, as well as I would imagine additional engineering resources, additional other resources along the way.
Yeah, I mean, just keeping track of everything is an exercise, right? I mean, they're building things that go to space, unmanned, you know, seabed, new, all sorts of flying machines, right? And so whether they're involved in unmanned or, you know, commercial, all the things that you can sort of read on the website. Yep. But keeping track of where there might be opportunities is a full-time job or many full-time jobs in and of itself, just coordinating across the enterprise. But there's an endless amount of toys in the toy chest, if you will, to explore.
Do you see an expansion in the reasonable future where you start to open up to other markets as well using that technology, considering that Boeing's there and that you have the platform and so many of the things that you do apply to other markets?
Yeah, I mean, we're always, we look for new opportunities. We've got a 2-day strategy session coming up over the next couple of days, right? And so we talk about all sorts of things where our technology might be useful, maybe in the whole, which is, the whole application taken to new markets or pieces of it that might be interesting businesses in and of itself. We've got a very rich set of technologies, some of which you could build entire businesses on. And so we talk about all sorts of things like that.
Yeah. I mean, obviously we've had, certainly for our viewers, that we've got questions coming in, things like that. There's people wondering whether we're going to see 4Flight get involved in marine, whether there's other, other areas at some point, because again, you've created a tool set and now, especially with Boeing, with you, and behind you, that, there's a little less of a constraint in terms of where you have to focus, as you mentioned from the beginning of the show, on based on your resources.
Yeah, I mean, any market we would get into, we've got to have some method of entering that is unique that we can build and have an advantage on. I mean, if we were to say, like, let's go into the marine market, well, there's lots of stuff in the marine market already, right? So what are you going to do differently that allows you to build a successful business on top of that?
Right.
So, I mean, that's how we would look at those sorts of things. Maybe if half the people on the leadership team buy a boat, we could find ourselves going, we want to have weather and charts for nautical uses. Well, there's a lot of overlap there, and there's some foundational technologies that maybe may apply, but we might have to go compete with the 4Flights of boating, right? And
right.
I think if I was in a position to come, compete with the 4Flight team from a standing start, that would be really tough, just because of everything that's been built into it. So we look at other markets the same way, which is, what do we have that can allow us to enter in some meaningful way that would be different than what's out there? And mm-hmm. And usually that's, is there a disruption that we can ride, right? What's going to disrupt the incumbents in that market?
Right. Well, as we said at the beginning of the show, I mean, we have seen at Social Flight a pretty, dramatic change throughout the crisis. Of first, a slowdown, of course, within general aviation, and we did quite a bit of work to try to keep people going, keep these very fragile general aviation businesses going. And now, of course, we're seeing quite a bit of a pickup. What have you seen, and what's been your experience at 4Flight regarding COVID-19 and going through this period?
Yeah, man, I wish I took notes every day on how I was thinking or feeling throughout the crisis. But we've seen a lot over the past few months. I have a chart in front of me right now that I look at every day, which we call our COVID leading indicators dashboard, which is what's happening across our business and in the market at large with the data that we can track. And March and April were pretty scary times, right? And so we saw a big contraction in activity in March. It sort of troughed at the middle of April, right? And we saw revenue come down in that period, just like many other companies have seen. And so the question at that point in time is, where's the bottom, and when are we gonna get out of that? I think we went into COVID saying, well, people are going to fly again, right? And we'll continue to build features that make their lives better, and we'll keep doing that. Fortunately, we got through April and saw the bottom and started seeing activity recover in the business and general aviation markets. So we call them personal aviation and the business aviation. So personal aviation was first. And I think it was, folks like you and I who have, piston airplanes said, I've had enough, I'm going to go fly. Right. And so, our family's routine during COVID was every Saturday, Sunday, went down to the hangar, took the DA-40 up, did a few laps. We didn't really have anywhere to go, but we started seeing that in the data, right? And so I remember thinking, gosh, I want to get out and fly the airplane. I'm going to do that. And then I saw the data and, flight plans filed and flight activity start to rise. Summer was really strong. And in August and September, we saw GA activity start to increase and exceed 2019 levels. And so late August, the Labor Day weekend, and through August, we've seen that grow. Piston pilots were first, followed by turboprop pilots. And then in August and September, late August and early September, jet traffic is measured in terms of IFR flight plan filings exceeded 2019. And we started seeing more logbook entries and more customers recording track logs and taking off and landing and that sort of stuff. And that's really encouraging to see. And, you know, GA always gets a little sleepy in the fall, especially in the winter months, as certain areas really start to ratchet back on their flying, you know, Canada and places like that, and start buttoning up airplanes. So we'll see that come back down a bit in the fall. But so far, all those trends are looking very much in line with prior years and are at levels above historic or at least 2019. And so we're pretty bullish on you know, where things are heading. It's not going to be as great as 2019, obviously. Our business is still growing strong. You know, we didn't have to take any actions you know, during the pandemic, which is great. So the team is at full strength and continuing to deliver and grow in the business. And you know, we've been fortunate that areas like military and business aviation have just been you know, really hungry for the products that we're building, and you know, that's helped continue drive the growth and the reinvestment.
Right, and that makes sense. And of course, since you weren't very reliant on commercial aviation, that protected you quite a little bit. Do you see what's happening in terms of any push in the future, with especially with your partnership with Boeing and commercial aviation support?
Yeah, so the 4Flight team actually builds the commercial flight deck application called Flight Deck Pro for the commercial market. That market you know, did come back. A lot of tails are still flying, though. I mean, a lot of although passenger traffic down and the volume of flights are down, the number of unique airplanes still flying is still very high, right? So, you know, commercial is a very important part of the portfolio. And as I mentioned earlier, we'll do things on the small end that deliver more value for the high end, but we're really looking at, you know, how do we share more across the portfolio and how do we drive innovation in these different markets? And some of that is, you know, what have we done for general aviation pilots that is useful to commercial and vice versa. And, you know, the future is super exciting in terms of, you know, things that we'll be delivering for pilots. I can't give any of that away. We never want to, you know, spoil the surprise there. But the things that I see in development today that are coming out in the coming months is really just mind-blowing. And I think, you know, customers go, well, what's next for 4Flight? And, you know, man, the stuff that we're going to be delivering, you know, in the coming quarters and years is really something I think to be excited about. I know I get to see and play with some of these new things and really look forward to having the rest of our customers get to experience those.
That's fantastic. Now, you did put a little teaser out there saying during the crisis, especially, you know, when it was at its most challenging, you took the family out to the hangar and got out at the A40. So tell us, you know, what are your wings? What's your progression been through some of these different things? What have you been flying? And what are you flying now?
Yes, yeah, so I, you know, I've had a DA-40 for, gosh, almost 8 years. You know, I put a lot of hours on that. That's what we use to just, you know, fly around the local area. When we need to move further distances, you know, the business has a Citation Mustang. You know, I fly an M2 as well. And so that's our transportation. And the progression has really been, and the progression is really mapped to the product progression as well of all of, you know, the leaders of 4Flight as they have grown in the types of airplanes that they fly. You know, on the leadership team, we fly everything from pistons and float planes up to turbojet aircraft, right? And so that has really driven the product. But you know, I love flying the M2, and really what I love about, you know, that is getting new experiences and new ratings and really trying to sharpen my skills and, you know, and evolve that. And so you know, I'm really looking forward to over the next year continuing to expand that, right? I don't have a commercial rating, so yeah, that's something I want to spend some time on. I'd love to learn how to fly helicopters. But you know, I don't have anything in particular that's a favorite. I really like now at this point just experiencing all sorts of different you know, types of flying. I've done a lot of backcountry flying in the past year. That helped shape the product as well. We've got a number of people that are doing that in the company. You know, that helps us deliver a better solution for those pilots as well. But spent a lot of time in a Husky last summer and really enjoyed that.
So I guess the message here is, if we get Tyson into, if you want a certain area to get expanded within ForeFlight, we got to get Tyson involved in that. A little more backcountry flying, a little seaplane flying, whatever. If this is an area that you want,
someone on the team, you got to get someone on the team to do it. You know, it's not like I said, I mean, I'm just one voice, you know, in the product development, but you know, it's the team and all their experiences that, you know, shape it, but you got to have someone on the team that does that. And we're fortunate that, you know, we've got ex-military pilots. We have, you know, former search and rescue helicopter pilots, corporate jet pilots, you know, active, you know, captains and airline aircraft. We've got it all. And we're fortunate that we have all those perspectives and those voices who, you know, want us to build things that help them out too. But definitely being in airplanes helps us focus on that particular one.
It's, you know, it's so great that I'll tell you, and anything that has to do with the small to mid-size, or now, of course, you're part of an enormous aviation company. The idea that you can stay rooted in that, and that so much of your passion works its way from your daily life and experiences and things that you're able to do in aviation, right back into the product, right back into things you do. It just makes it all worthwhile.
It's a great journey. I mean, we're really fortunate. I think a lot of us would say we're fortunate. One, to have been introduced to aviation and then been able to find, you know, a career at ForeFlight where we're really part of, you know, driving innovation forward. We've got lots of, you know, job positions open. So, you know, go to the website if you're looking for something new to do. I have to certainly promote that. But there's, you know, lots of things that we're doing across markets that we need more people to help us out with.
Absolutely. Well, I mean, I think certainly after hearing the types of things that you're working on, where you're going with this, a few hints that you dropped along the way, I'm sure that more than a few people will be dropping their resume in the mail to you to find a way to join the team. And of course, COVID has also created a normalcy among a distributed workforce that's opened up doors everywhere. And so I just want to say, Tyson, thank you so much for joining us. I mean, there's such a fantastic story, both your own and of course that of ForeFlight, everything that you and your co-founder Jason have done for general aviation is absolutely fantastic.
Well, thanks so much. You know, I know it's a challenging time out there, so I, you know, encourage everyone to just you know, stay safe and be well, and hopefully we can all come together at a show here in the near future and yes, celebrate being together.
Absolutely. I couldn't have said it better myself. There is, you know, again, to everyone, check it out, because we want to be, of course, with Social Flight, your actual mission to fly, find out where and the why you do it, and then get out there and fly. And when you do it, you'll be able to do that with ForeFlight and find your way to your destination safely, weather, and also with safe social practices along the way. So again, Tyson, thank you so much for joining us here on Social Flight Live. And thank you to everyone else who's joined us and taken time out of their evening for this show. Now, next Tuesday, as always, at 8 p.m. Eastern time, we will be back with, in this case, Barry and Brian Schiff. And for those of us that grew up, of course, seeing amazing videos from Barry along the way, it's really fantastic. I remember one where he landed a Cessna using just the doors and trim and showed you all sorts of crazy things. And so we're going to have him on the show. Following that, on October 6th, Richard Van Grunswen, the founder of Vans Aircraft, will be joining us. And we've got so many more things coming up with our T-51 build behind us, a night for that. And Mike Bush will be back on October 20th. So with that, again, Tyson, thank you so much for your time and for everyone else for their time tonight on Social Flight Live. Until next time, blue skies.